1039 LI News Radio. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and listen live 24/7 at linewsradio.com.
Well, time for the Shine Report as we take a look in and around Washington and the world. Part of another spotlight segment this morning, the great Henry Shinecoff, of course, Shinecoff Communications, full-service strategic communications company, headed by the great Henry. And, of course, using the materials of pinpoint, politically savvy strategic planning, and the tools of modern communications. As always, we love having him. Henry, how are you, sir?
I am great, you know. I couldn't get any better than this, you know.
Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
Family never bore. The same thing every year. There's a family that was very kind to me when I was quite young. I had no place. Actually, you know, interesting life story. No place to live. They took me in. I finished high school, and I go to see them every year. And that's what we do. I take my family. So I'm very excited about that always.
Good stuff. Good stuff. So, you know, I'm going to give a pass to Al Franken. I'm going to think that this man is completely delusional, needs some help, and thinks that he is in a constant skit of Saturday Night Live, Henry. I think he should get a pass. What do you think?
The problem is, let's take personal feelings out of it and let's look at politics. Al Franken is the first victim of his own non-comical activities, which he might have thought comical once before, but are not anymore. And it is the way for the Democrats to position the Republicans in a way that gives advantage to the Democrats. How so? Because the Democrats then become the bearers of morality, while Donald Trump and the Access Hollywood tape continue to circulate. So this is an attempt politically to grab the high ground. And it does something else. It kills Al Franken off as a possible... even kibitzer, for lack of better terminology, in the presidential sweepstakes of 2020, which makes an awful lot of people very happy.
So in essence, I think it's kind of a given that he actually will indeed step down today as far as his announcement is concerned. Would you agree?
Well, he's got limited choices. Everybody is ganged up on him. You see, the Democratic thinking here from the top down is to say very little and let the president bury the Republicans, which is lousy patriotism, but probably reasonably cynical in good politics. And good is defined by getting what you want. So Al Franken, has got no support within that conference. They got to throw out a body so that they can continue to run to the moral high ground, whether it be on taxes. You'll see them start talking about destruction of families and loss of health care in a more pronounced way, and that will be the new moral majority argument. That plus no sexual harassment, no sexual abuse.
No question about it. Talking with Hank Shinecoff. Let's move on to the Russia investigation. We were kind of rocked a little bit with Michael Flynn and his admittance that he did lie to the FBI. But, you know, do we surmise yesterday, Hank Shinecoff, that Donald Trump Jr. just has an ongoing case of amnesia?
Well, if the reports are correct that he somehow cited attorney-client privilege as a reason not to speak about what he and his father may or may not have discussed prior to his father Donald becoming the president of the United States, then you know that there's a kind of P.T. Barnum, Houdini, and whatever magician or entertainer you might have, sucker born every minute argument. You know, what is he hiding that he will not tell the truth? And he's in a great position legally. I'm no lawyer, but I know enough to know that if you're not before a prosecutorial body, and, you know, which doesn't have subpoena authority, can force you to compel you to show up, but can't. There's no sanction if you don't talk and say what they want, or what they're trying to find out anyway, then what do you lose? The attempt here is to paint the Trump family and the politics of this one and the perception as being victimized by overzealous Congress who have nothing else to do all day long but create political hay. So Donald Trump comes out of this, Junior comes out of this looking like a nincompoop, the so-called cognoscenti and people who follow this. But to the Trump base, he probably looks like a hero for again, that 34% for standing up to unchallenged and unattained power that is abusing other people.
And, you know, Hank, you know, the way I look at this is, I think the key thing, and again, I'm not an attorney either, but I look at the attorney-client privilege, I guess, citing this whole thing, with Trump Jr. really wouldn't tell investigators yesterday what he and his father actually discussed, again, reports servicing about the, June 2016 meeting that he had in Trump Tower with Russians. So in essence, he cited this attorney-client privilege, and, of course, the president and his son had a conversation this summer after Trump Jr. had produced emails about his involvement in the meeting. This is according to Adam Schiff, who attended the session yesterday, Congressman Schiff. And, of course, at the classified hearing, Trump Jr. did acknowledge speaking with senior White House aide Hope Hicks to help craft some sort of response to the initial report. But, of course, you know, you're not going to hear any details. He didn't really provide anything about communications with his father and did invoke the attorney-client privilege because of the presence of attorneys. So, obviously, just another round of nothing here, right?
Absolutely nothing, more chaos. The generalized Trump behavior pattern seems to be that when you have controversy that is unquenchable, like Russia, the Russia inquiry, and I might add parenthetically, you know, Donald Trump Jr. was one of the people, I guess, at that famous Trump Tower meeting where three people now at least have been indicted. So the best is probably yet to come, but and I wouldn't count them off the handcuff list. But regardless. The Trump style, which is a great PR style and worth emulating, create lots of noise when there's chaos in one place, but the chaos moves around and you're in control of the chaos, i.e. Russia going on, Russia probes, gone under investigation, Sun appearing before a congressional committee, more chaos, tax bill. Well, what you do is you roll out Israel, and you continue to try to roll out more tax bills. You try to make it look like you are creating more chaos in another direction so that your base follows you around. Fascinating. And we've not seen anything like this in quite some ever. I don't know in America, in my lifetime. We've never had this kind of daily, it's not a soap opera, but it's like it's The Apprentice on a daily basis with a combination of the Ed Sullivan Show, because you have variety entertainers along the way, and Daniel Boone. Or Davy Crockett, you're going through the woods. It's constantly new. There's terror and everything. It's kind of really quite extraordinary. The soap opera.
It is extraordinary. There's no question about it. Talking with the great Hank Shankoff. You know, I want to move over to the Jerusalem issue because, you know, his decision to recognize Jerusalem, the president, as Israel's capital, eventually move the U.S. embassy there. Could be, you know, listen, you can make the case, Hank, that you could temporarily derail this Mideast peace process. You know, a lot of people think it'll destroy any chance for peace. You have a Palestinian president there and Mahmoud Abbas, who said the move will only aid extremist organizations that want to wage these so-called holy wars. A good move or a bad move, in your opinion, as far as the entire process is concerned in naming Jerusalem?
All right, let me take my personal feelings out of this and talk about it simply as putting on my academic hat with a PhD political science. So if you reduce options for people, theoretically you make it impossible for it to have an outcome. You kind of position them so they can't move. You make the dynamic impenetrable. That may be what went on here. I think Thomas Friedman wrote about this and it's pretty clear. It's something I said in my own household, but I'm not Thomas Friedman, when the discussion first became more pronounced in the last week or so. What you do is you make it less likely you have a deal, no question, because you don't. This is trading off what is your best negotiating piece. So what do you have left to deal with? Not much. So why do this now? Well, why not? What he promised to do it to the Israelis. There's really no peace process going on. This is a dream of people. The idea of a two-state solution, well, you know, that's been around for a long time, and certainly both sides have been unable to reach an agreement. But I have yet to see Israelis running around raking school buses with children with automatic weapons. That I haven't seen yet. If someone can prove that to me, I'd like to meet them. Or running into school, into buildings with civilians while wearing self-detonating suicide bomber outfits. I mean, Are you going to have violence in the region? You have had since the beginning of time. There's nothing new. Jerusalem has real meaning, symbolic meaning, not symbolic meaning, but tremendous meaning to Catholics, Jews, and others. The Arab argument is a good one, but the problem is when they conquered the region in 721, Ramla, I believe, was the capital, not Jerusalem, so that's abject silliness. There's been no peace process of consequence for a long time. Nobody can agree. They conquered the property 50 years ago. Who's kidding who? Is the United States going to give back Florida to the Seminoles? I mean, is we're going to California, New Mexico, Nevada, and Texas are suddenly returning to Mexico? Are we kidding ourselves? So the problem here is, what do you do next? Was it better to have status quo and no chaos, or are you going to have chaos? Nobody knows yet. Is it likely that, violence will continue in the region? Well, there's nothing to indicate it won't. But going that way, like I said, many of time. So what's new?
What's new is right. Talking with Hank Shankoff. A couple of minutes left. Hank, so let's move to tax overhaul, the bill. The vote, 51-49. Twofold here, the McCain flip. I was shocked. You know, listen, and I've said this all week. This president's roots are here, in the state of New York, in the Queens, Long Island area. The devastation that would happen to Long Islanders, more than anyone in the state, with property taxes the way they are, and a cap of only $10,000 to write it off. So in essence, you know, you couple that with the mortgage interest, you couple that with the ATM deal, and you have complete chaos. So I ask you this. Were you surprised at John McCain's vote? And why isn't this president thinking of where the heck he came from with all this being said and done now?
Because he's not, and they're not, and I'm not surprised at McCain for the following reason. The clear analysis that one needs to make is to look at the partisanship of this bill. This tax bill, if enacted in any of the forms we've seen it, will be the Democrat killing bill, and will have a lasting effect on the partisan balance in this country. It'll empty out, or begin to empty out, in greater with greater intensity. Traditional, well, I don't like traditional, but really, I don't like the word blue, but higher propensity, higher Democrat voter propensity locations like New York, New Jersey, and California. People will not be able to afford to live the way that they're used to. It will clean out the labor union populations. Retirement out immediately. Okay. And it will reduce the possibility of Democrats having the kind of labor unions, particularly, and public sector unions, because that exit, and because the drain of resources in those labor rich and heavily organized locations will reduce their ability to spend money in political campaigns over the term. I mean, it's not good news for Democrats. It's not good news for people who believe in fairness in the workplace. But it is good news for people who make above a certain amount of money, because they're going to. The presumption is that they will have more disposable income, and therefore they will spend more and boost the economy. It didn't happen for Ronald Reagan. It won't happen here, but it will destroy over time significant portions of the country and rearrange the population. John McCain's legacy might be, frankly, a spike in the population in Arizona and an increase in the resources that they are going to get from former New Yorkers, former Californians, and former New Jerseyans.
And, you know, Hank, and I've said this all week pretty much, and listen, I know the governor with Andrew Cuomo getting together with Jerry Brown out of California, New Jersey's governor-elect Phil Murphy. You know, you can say what you want as far as being lambasted and everything else. That's great. But in my opinion right now, you know, this governor is on the stage. I mean, the spotlight is on him as far as 2018. I know he's thinking 2020, and I know he has aspirations of a different kind here. But if he doesn't think this state is in trouble, and 2018 really the most important year of his tenure, then he's out of his mind. Because right now, people are reeling here. They're leaving the state. This tax situation has people saying, you know what, I can't make it here anymore. If this governor does not thwart some situations involved here, then we've got a lot of problems. And this is where the governor leads. Do you agree with that?
I think that the governor, Andrew Cuomo, is a very smart,
Might have lost Shankov. There you go.
Very smart, capable, and talented guy. And what's going to happen is that he's going to, regardless of the impact of New York, he's going to wind up as a winner in the national discussion. Why? Because he's attacking the president. He's been early and in front of it. Smart. Number one. Number two, the state has significant financial problems. And that budget hole is probably, we've read it, just reported in the $4 billion range. Look, Andrew Cuomo will come out of this as the leader of the opposition to Trump, and he will be a serious player in the 2020 stage. And I don't believe, frankly, that there'll be anybody of significance to run against him, either in the general election or primary. And he'll have that bully pulpit to do whatever he wants. Now, will he be a presidential candidate? I've known him for 40 years. I worked with him, and I've worked against him. I did the campaign and knocked him out of the governor's race in 2002 when he ran the first time. So I know him. I respect him a lot. He's very talented, and he will be a leader nationally of a New York that, frankly, won't be existing much more.
So, in essence, you really believe, I mean, listen, I know you have a lot of respect for him, but you certainly have to believe, Hank, that this man has a lot on his plate come when session starts up in Albany. You know, he has to be, you know, his full attention has to be right now in this state. This is a very tumultuous time for the state of New York, right?
By paying attention to New York and leading the battle through social media, because now anything you say is instantaneously beamed to the rest of the world, he becomes a national leader in the battle against Trump and against the Republicans, and that, you know, not a bad position to be in. I'm not an expert on government, but I am an expert on politics. And the best position you can have is to have an enemy that everybody in your state feels strongly about, because they're going to start feeling that tax bang. And it gets him off the hook and allows Andrew Cuomo to be shielded from the other problems and attacks that normally would be tossed to the governor going into a third term.
All right. We shall see. Always a pleasure to have you, sir. Hank Shankov, Shankov Communications. We'll talk soon. How's that?
Hey, have a great day, and thank you, listeners, for listening to me again. I appreciate it.